Hello and welcome to Cinema Joes, where three average Joes discuss the significant topics in movie culture. I am your host, Alex Marcus, podcast editor for ThePopBreak.com. With me, as always, is the proprietor of TheCinemaverick.com and co-host of the brand new monthly podcast from PopBreak called Podwork Angels, a Rush podcast. It's Justin Mancini. Hello, Justin.
Hey, Alex.
Alex, that's Podwork Angels, the Rush Hour. We're trying to draw in the Jackie Chan fandom here. This is very important.
And making his cue before I asked him to, and his triumphant return to the Oscar reaction conversation after missing our episode last year, but still managing to win the Cinema Joe's Oscar pool anyway, it's FranceNoir.com proprietor and fellow Podwork Angels Rush Hour co-host, Noah France.
Hello, hello, hello. I still can't get over the fact that I won last year by picking a movie that I hadn't seen and still haven't seen.
It's the best way to do it.
Yeah, it's how it shakes out sometimes.
Ignorance always works out. That's what the last 2 years have taught us, right?
When it comes to the Oscars, sometimes the less you know, the better.
That's very true. That is, I can verify that.
If you couldn't tell by now, this week on the show, we're back after one long trip around the sun to react to this year's Academy Award nominations, and we're happy to welcome back to the show the PopBreak.com film editor, Marissa Carpico. Welcome back, Marissa.
Hey, guys. Great to be back.
Now, last year, we were genuinely shocked by the relatively high quality of nominees, with a few Oscar villains on the scene, but not really that much, and no outright embarrassing Oscar picks. Also, we had several of the best films and performances of the year actually getting recognized, which is shocking to consider, including a historically diverse slate of nominees, even with a COVID-induced shallow field. So before jumping into this year's nominees, I did listen to our episode last year, and I wanted to take a brief trip down memory lane to remind us what we were all talking about 1 year ago today. One of the first things that I noticed from that episode was that we were still very mad about Green Book winning Best Picture. Came up many times,
despite that happening two years earlier. That will never fade. I mean,
it truly. Also, a funny thing.
Time does not heal all wounds, listeners.
Yeah, I think we're still a little bit mad, but I hope that those feelings have at least diminished over time after Parasite and Nomadland winning back to back. But another thing that came up in that episode was that Marissa was very skeptical of West Side Story and thought that In the Heights would blow it away. And I wanted to check back in with you now, Marissa, on that prediction.
I mean, I was made a fool of by everyone I trusted. And you know what? I'm happy to. I'm sure we'll talk about West Side Story later, but I was thrilled by it. And I was not, you can read a review of me not being very happy with In the Heights. I mean, you know, that director has directed some of my favorite Step Up movies, and I trusted him more, and I shouldn't have.
Oh, wait, you mean you expected yourself to like In the Heights more than West Side Story?
Not 100%.
Like for it to get more, not like for, I thought it was like you were expected it to get more Oscar nominations.
No, I expected to like In the Heights more than West Side Story, because In the Heights is, as I said, directed by the master director of Step Up 3D, which is the widely considered maybe the best Step Up. And then West Side Story was directed by Steven Spielberg, who, if you read the backstage, you know, gossip about Smash, made every wrong decision in helping make that one of the buzziest, most hate-watchable shows of all time.
Well, it seems like he figured it out in the decade between those two things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, something else that happened in that episode was that we all laughed at Love and Monsters getting nominated. And I believe Marissa even said, like, there's no way I'm going to watch that. But it turns out that Marissa and Justin both did watch that movie. And it, yes, according to Letterboxd, liked it quite a bit.
Low-key masterpiece.
Yeah.
It's really fun. It's really fun.
The same cannot be said about Pinocchio, which also got a lot of laughs last year, and I don't think went over as well with you guys.
I'm haunted every day.
And then the last thing I wanted to mention is that I was very excited for Steven Soderbergh to be producing the Oscars that year. And history has definitely decided that his production choices were a disaster. But I just want to say on the record that I actually loved almost the entire show. And I wish every Oscar was like that. And listen, he made a very bold, calculated chance with the Chadwick Boseman thing, and it didn't pay off. And that sucks. But other than that, I don't quibble with anything that he did. And I'm sorry that everyone else feels differently. Yeah,
the Chadwick Boseman thing is not his fault.
Well, it's a little bit his fault because he was too confident that that was going to happen.
Well, okay. Okay.
Well, you should just never.
We were all confident.
It minimizes the importance of the best picture win, which is the whole point of the show. So he just, there's no reason to move that. If he had put the Boseman situation second to last, still would have been a shitty thing to happen, but it wouldn't have been such a horrible end to the night.
Yeah. I felt it would have ended with a whimper.
Yeah.
I felt even worse when I actually got around to seeing The Father, and I mean, Anthony Hopkins's performance is absolutely amazing, but it's a performance worth celebrating, but just it was the exact worst circumstance under which to try and celebrate it.
Nobody won in that situation.
No, truly, no one.
You know,
the only winner was chaos.
He didn't even get to accept it, so it's like that was really the worst part.
Yeah, just like because it was like, here's the winner. Oh, okay, bye, guys. It was like, oh no.
Yeah, last year simply reinforced for me, I am not allowed to actually watch the Oscars because the whole Moonlight La La Land thing. I woke up 10 minutes after that all went down, and I specifically got up to watch the night the Green Book won. Then the last two years, yeah. I skipped it entirely, and hey, we got Parasite and Nomadland. So
he is Noah's a big jinx, so he can't watch it anymore, which is good for your health, considering you're on German time.
I can't watch the Oscars.
But okay, speaking of the award show that Noah won't be watching this year, guys, what did you think about the all the nominations? This year we have Jane Campion's The Power of the Dog leading the pack with 12 nominations, including Best Picture and Best Director, Jane Campion being the first woman ever to get two Best Director nominations in her career, which is, you know, one of those stats that is like great for her and bad for everyone else that it took this long for that to happen. But I just, right now, you know, we got a lot of categories to get into, a lot of segments, but before we get into anything specific, just big broad picture opinions about this year's crop of nominees. Marissa?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of thought last year would be a bit of a weird year just because so few things got released that would have been, you know, a lot of studios and production companies were just holding back their big Oscar pushes, you know, their big Oscar movies that have been waiting for a while, simply because it just was a weird year. And I actually think this is kind of a random batch too. Not a bad batch necessarily. There are definitely films I don't like as much in this film, but, or in this Best Picture race especially. But I mean, it's an interesting slate of nominees for the most part. With some surprises, and I mean, hopefully, I just don't know how things are going to go, really. I suppose there's just a lot of very different movies here that I don't think there's usually so many, for me at least, like very different feels to these movies. Like every one of these movies does not feel like the other one in a weird way,
which is nice because it actually feels like you're getting kind of a representative sample of the year, no matter what the Spider-Man fans have to say.
It doesn't deserve it.
It doesn't.
It's not into the Spider-Verse. I mean,
yeah, let's get real.
Yeah, that is one of the big conversations around Oscar nominations this year is that like, oh, Spider-Man No Way Home was the biggest movie ever, didn't get a Best Picture nomination, and people are saying, oh, the populism and everything, whatever. And I just think that all those people are so out of touch with what's been going on with the Oscars in the last few years.
It,
like,
you know what it is?
A Spider-Man movie got a Best Animated Oscar only a couple of years ago. It's like I feel like these people don't actually, they're still stuck in like 2013 when it comes to these conversations, and they haven't been paying attention enough to know that it's not accurate anymore. Oscars will reward a populist film if it's good enough to.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with it for me is that, like, you know, that's what the money is for, basically, that sort of Mad Men thing. Like, you don't have to have everything. It's like it's like I think of Mad Men and I think of the Wells for Sensitive Boys skit from SNL. It's like, I feel like I'm Emma Stone being like, everything is for you. Not this one thing is for us. Just let us have the Oscars. You know? You don't understand Kevin Feige. It, so don't make fun of it if you don't understand it. Just let me have this, please.
Kevin Feige can literally wipe his tears with $100 bills. He's fine.
He doesn't even think of me. You know, just let me live.
Fully agree.
Tell you what, Spider-Man No Way Home fans, you can all close your eyes and pretend that Andrew Garfield's nomination is for Spider-Man No Way Home. You can, if that makes you feel better, just do that.
And honestly,
it probably helped.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it definitely helped. Like, that always helps an acting nomination, is when you have other successful performances right around the voting season. And, you know, he had his supporting turn in Tammy Faye, which not a lot of people saw, but people who saw, well, were mixed on. So I don't know if that helped or hurt him. but then Spider-Man, everybody talked about him as, like, the best thing about that movie. That definitely helped him get in for Tick, Tick, Boom.
That's the only nomination that Tick, Tick, Boom got, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, which is really saying something, because you would think that, like, with that sort of, you know, big musical, that you would have at least gotten, like, a sound nomination or something like that, but
I don't. Is it possible that, like, Tick, Tick, Boom and In the Heights split a lot of votes, and that's why, like, they both only combined for one, and, like, all the other musical nominations went to West Side Story?
Well, you know, Marissa's the expert on this, but my guess would be that it just... West Side Story was just the best of the three musicals, and so the musical vote just kind of consolidated around that.
Yeah, I basically probably agree with that. In the Heights is fine, but came out too early. It's a crowd pleaser rather than artistically satisfying. And Tick, Tick, Boom, I think, is maybe a little, probably a little weird for the average Oscar older viewer, let's say.
It is extremely theater nerd. We talked about this in our review. It's very theater nerd.
Yeah. My parents watched it for 5 minutes, I believe.
And it's also...
We had a whole bit in our episode talking about the Sunday brunch sequence.
Yes.
I mean, weeping in an Alamo Manhattan, you know, but my mom and dad being like, what is this?
I mean, and hey, Lin-Manuel Miranda does have a nomination this year for a different mm-hmm. movie, but still.
It's true.
Like, he and Andrew Garfield have certainly gotten their due.
Now, Justin, I feel like we've mostly heard Noah's big picture take on the awards now. Justin, how about you?
So, you know, compared to previous years, I have to say, I was not as surprised by a lot of these nominations, and at the same time, haven't seen a lot of them. Because, guys, I don't know if you know, but doing community theater takes up a lot of your free time when you're also working full time. And that's what I was doing from October to December when a lot of these movies came out. So I feel like I've been playing catch up the last few days. And as a result, I haven't seen a lot of them. And I really haven't seen a lot of the ones that I feel like, to be fair, I haven't seen yet. But I really feel like I'm just going to be kind of meh on, like, I'm missing a lot of those movies. I'm talking about movies like Being the Ricardos or King Richard or even Belfast, to be perfectly honest. You know, again, this is speculation, but just based on what I've heard, based on the chatter that I've heard around them, I'm just kind of like, all right, yeah.
Based on everything that I've said to you over the last 3 months.
Yeah, that's certainly a big component. So as a result, it's like, I find it hard to say that I'm like, you know, happy or disappointed, because I just feel like there's a lot of holes right now for me. That said, I was happy to see certain people that I really like getting some first time nominations. I was, you know, Anjanou Ellis is someone who I've always really loved, and it was great to see her get represented. I was happy to see other films get more nominations than I was expecting, which I might get into a little bit later. You know, I think there was definitely a lot of films that I was just happy to see here in general, even if I hadn't seen them yet, just based on the chatter and based on just the, you know, diversity of stories it seems like we got here. I think that was really an astute point that you made, Marissa, about these being like very different tones of movies and like about different things. And I think that is something that is hopeful to me. And I like the fact that there seems to be more love for international films. That's something I feel like has always been lacking in the last few years. We're starting to see a little push in the right direction, I think. So So overall, I don't feel like I'm, you know, majorly disappointed in any of these, maybe certain categories, but I may have a better idea once I see more of those, let's say, you know, lesser or let's say the films that seem more like Oscar bait that I still need to see, and maybe just dreading a little bit. So, yeah. So I guess very confused thoughts on these nominees for now.
Yeah, I have to say the only one I'm missing that I'm really like definitely burning to see is Drive My Car, which I haven't seen because it has just not been available for me yet. So
yeah, I'm hopeful that I'm going to be able to see that within the next month, because I've been looking forward to seeing that forever. Marissa, have you caught that yet?
Yeah, I watched it like last weekend or something. I mean, it's hard to find showtimes simply because it's 3.5 hours long or whatever. So I had to like make time to see it rather than just like, you know, picking a random day. But it's totally worth seeing.
Nice. Now, some of the things that jumped out to me with these awards are, number one, I think it's really cool that most of these acting races seem very competitive. A lot of the times the acting races can kind of just fall into this kind of rote, like, well, it's clearly this person and then everyone else is running for second place, and maybe you'll have one really competitive category. And it seems like almost all of the categories are at least somewhat competitive this year. So, and I think an Oscar with a lot of competitive acting categories is always a fun Oscars to watch. I also think that it's very interesting that two married couples got nominated together this year. That's kind of wild. I think it's the first time that's ever happened. Jesse Plemons and Kirsten Dunst for their roles in The Power of the Dog, which they were in together as a married couple. They both got in, and I feel like that's really a testament that if you can get Oscar nominations for playing spouses to your real life spouses, I think that's really a very interesting historical note. And they are both great, so I'm happy to see it. I'm a longtime fan of both of theirs. They were great as husband and wife in Fargo season 2 many, many years ago, and I've been ride or die for them since then, so very happy for that. And then Javier Bardem and Penelope Cruz, also married couple, also nominated for Best Actor and Best Actress. So that was really interesting as well. And speaking of Penelope Cruz, I just watched Parallel Mothers last week, and it's phenomenal. And I'm so excited that she snuck into the Best Actress race. And I hope that she wins, because she's so great. And this field is wide open, so that would be really exciting.
I gotta say, I've not seen Being the Ricardos, but it's always good to see Bardem here. He's one of those guys that I'm ride or die for.
Yeah, I wouldn't have nominated that performance, but, you know, I mean, there's certainly worse people that could have been nominated in the category. I'll leave it at that.
Do tell, Alex.
Also excited to see Kristen Stewart, who is a huge favorite on this podcast, as anyone who listens knows, get in there for Spencer. It was kind of crazy that she was considered the front runner for so long and then almost didn't get nominated. And so I'm very happy to see her in there. I'll be very interested to see how that category shakes out. I think it's the most competitive one, but a lot of faves in there. So that's really exciting. Also, a weird thing that came up that I was really shocked by was that Judi Dench got in over Katrina Balfe for Belfast, which just seemed wild to me, because, number one, Balfe got in all the precursor nominations, where Dench, I don't think, got in any of them. And number two, Balfe just gives straight up the best performance in that movie, like, by a mile. And so to see her get skipped instead of Dench was really a shock to me. And I'm curious what you guys think about that, at least. I don't think Noah and Justin, you haven't seen Belfast, right?
Not yet, no.
No, but I suspect, a part of me is wondering if this is sort of like an apology act, because Judi Dench was, in heavy air quotes, supposed to win 3 years ago when Olivia Colman swept in for The Favorite, and that was like, that was the same year that Green Book won Best
Picture. That was Glenn Close.
Yeah, that was Glenn Close.
Did I just switch up Glenn Close and Judi Dench?
Seems like you did, but that's okay, because they are both
back,
two of the most.
I need to make another pitcher of coffee and just inject it right into my body with UV strips, because I don't know what the fuck is going on with my brain right now.
They are two of the most nominated actresses in Academy history, so it's understandable that you would get them confused. And actually, with this nomination, according to Vanity Fair, Judi Dench became the most nominated actress who is a not an American actress. So the most, like, she qualifies as an international actress.
I thought you were going to follow that up with most nominated actress not named Meryl Streep.
No, no, there's a couple others, but yeah. But yeah, so that's kind of cool. Marissa, what do you think about this?
Yeah, I mean, that seems right. I think it's probably a question of reputation, realistically. For the Oscar voters, Katrina Balfe is not a well-known entity. Judi Dench is, and Judy's decent in the film. So I wouldn't be surprised that she came to mind more easily than Katrina Balfe, frankly.
Yeah, I think she is very lovely in the movie. I don't mean to criticize her. It's just that Balfe is just so much the, like, she's the one thing that's giving, like, a true, genuinely, like, layered performance in that movie. And
it
so
does feel
it
like
was
a star-making role. I totally agree with you, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, for people who hadn't seen her in, you know, Outlander or something or any other thing.
Absolutely. I mean, and she was in Ford versus Ferrari a few years ago, Oscar voters, like, know her. They should recognize her by now.
Yeah.
As a struggling wife, this is kind of like an upgrade
she
of
was
that
good
role,
in that
basically.
Role.
Yeah, and I would just say generally, you know, there's a lot of cases where I was maybe, if I do have some disappointments, it's cases where it's like very established actors playing, like, I feel like have their reputation as such a big part of why they get a nomination, whereas there's so many great performances this year where it's like they were not names. In some cases, it was their very first movie, and the performance, I just think, speaks enough for itself, but not enough to the Academy. So, to be fair, I do think these, you know, for a lot of these categories, it was a crowded field. So, you know, I don't know how majorly disappointed I can be, but at the same time, it is a case where I'm like, okay, these are people who just came onto the scene and, you know, blew us away, and you know, they just are not recognized in the same way as some of the more established names, and that's just kind of a reality of this. Mm-hmm. But maybe there was a part of me that was hoping those performances would be enough, especially in films that were widely seen, like West Side Story or Licorice Pizza, for example.
Yeah, and I think that there's really, even given that, though, there's no real embarrassing nominations that the Oscars likes to do sometimes. I mean, with maybe the exception of the J.K. Simmons nomination for being the Ricardos, because, I mean, he's totally fine in that movie. He's, like, very likable, and he delivers Aaron Sorkin dialogue, like, the best of them. But it's, like, supporting actor is such a, you could really go so many places with that. And just, that is just, I mean, I know he's a returning Oscar winner, so that probably helps. But that just seemed very, that was the one where I was just like, really? Him? Okay, I guess. But before we move on, I did also want to bring up a nomination that I was really excited to see. And that would be, of course, the Academy Awards nominating the garbage truck dress from Cruella in Best Costuming.
Jesus.
Clearly wow. The best example
just the dress,
of costuming.
Did the dress achieve sentience?
Well, I mean, you know, it's the team that produced that dress. Their accomplishment is being recognized, and that's really.
I haven't even seen Cruella. Do I want to know what the garbage truck dress is?
It's a dress that is made partially of a garbage truck that she kind of like rolls into.
Garbage
it's really
truck
awesome.
Dress.
It's very punk rock in a cool way. As,
are
as
you
someone
being
who
ironic,
is,
or are you for real? I just don't want to know where we're at. No judgment.
I mean, why not both?
Okay.
Other fun things about this award, about these nominations, before we get into some more specifics, Steven Spielberg got his 8th Best Director nomination, which ties him with 3rd all time for the most director nominations with Billy Wilder. He also has now gotten an Oscar nomination for direction in 6 consecutive decades, which is quite the stat. That is pretty tough to meet.
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Flea, the documentary Flea is the first film to ever get nominated in Best Documentary, Best International Film, and Best Animated Film. And someone who watched that movie last night, I fully am very excited and agree that it deserved all 3 of those and would be very happy to see it get a win. If Olivia Colman and Jesse Buckley both win, which is not totally outside the realm of possibility, it'll be only the 3rd time that 2 actors have won for the same character. Vito Corleone and the Joker are the other 2 examples. So I think that's really fun. And
this would be the first time in the same movie, right?
Yes. Yeah, I believe so. And the very last thing that I wanted to bring up before we move on is in the best documentary category, there was a movie called Ascension, which is directed by Jessica Kingdon, and is an MTV film. It's you can watch it on Paramount Plus if you're a Paramount Plus subscriber. And people might be surprised to see MTV films entering the Oscar race. And I just wanted to say that because I am a lunatic and just read a 1,000-page book on the history of HBO, I was not surprised at all, because it turns out that the mastermind of the HBO documentary division in HBO films for almost the entire length of HBO's existence is a woman called Sheila Nevins, who seems to be a genuine master at producing documentaries, and is a really cool person that I would recommend people learn more about, even if you don't want to read a 1,000-page book on HBO. She unceremoniously was kind of kicked out the door at HBO a couple years ago, just basically because she was old and a woman and made too much money, and the new regime came in and was like, we don't value what you do, and was really shitty. And she got a job at MTV Films, and everybody thought, oh, well, it's kind of just like a figurehead sort of position. She probably won't do very much. And here she is, only like 2 years later, getting another Oscar nomination for her works. So very excited to see that. That's a little kind of under the radar Oscar triumph, in my opinion. But now we're going to move on to more specific categories. Last year, we did a whole long conversation about the effects that COVID had on the awards. I think we all probably thought that would be a one-year conversation. And unfortunately, it is not, because, you know, as we all know, because we live in the world, COVID is certainly still a factor in how movies are seen and produced and how this awards campaign has been fought by the various nominee hopefuls. And so I'm curious, starting with you, Justin, did you see any impact on the awards race this year that COVID may have brought in a way that you maybe wouldn't have expected?
I think to a certain extent, perhaps. I know there wasn't the same level of, you know, like live events, maybe, which might have affected some of this. But I don't know. I think because maybe so much of it seemed predictable to me, it didn't necessarily, it didn't feel the same as last year somehow. I think maybe there's a little more, you know, preparation, precaution around this kind of thing. And I also think just the greater accessibility of things made it so that it didn't feel like certain things were getting missed. So I don't know. I would say overall, maybe not as much. That's my perception, but, you know, I'm curious to see what this is, what the effect that this is going to have on the campaigns going forward before the actual award ceremony.
Yeah, the one thing that really jumped out to me was the Best Picture nomination by Nightmare Alley, and some of the below the line Nightmare Alley nominations as well, because that was a movie that people just were not talking about a month and a half ago. It just seemed like that it came and went a little bit. I think the reviews were pretty much like, it's okay, it's not bad, it's if you like this sort of thing, you might enjoy it, but it was not the sort of like follow-up to the Best Picture winner that I think Guillermo del Toro may have expected. It was kind of a, you know, an outside chance at a lot of these nominations. And then based on some reporting that I've read, it seems that Guillermo del Toro was able to really pound the pavement and in a way that he wouldn't have been able to do if it weren't for the COVID era that we're in, because he's actually filming a film right now. I think it's the Pinocchio movie. I could be mistaken. It could be another one, but he's deep in production on some new film that he's making. And so he wouldn't have been really available for a lot of in-person events, but because everything has shifted to these like webinar, meet with the stars sort of things, he was able to host a lot of these web meetings and live streams and all this stuff, and really kind of get anyone who was interested to kind of to talk to him and let him sell them on why this film is so important. He also wrote this like big op-ed in I think it was the New York Times about the movie and why it's so important. And so I think that really kind of helped push it over the line in a lot of these categories, especially Best Picture, where I just didn't think we would see it in. Marissa, how about you?
It's not good. I'm pretty sure I rotted it on Rotten Tomatoes. I have to be honest.
I could see you not liking it. I saw it a couple days ago, and I liked it a lot more than I was expecting it to. It certainly is a movie that has its flaws. But
for me, the issue is that there is another one from the 40s that is an hour shorter and achieves a lot more rhetorically and cinematically.
But does it have Cate Blanchett as like an amazing?
No, it has a better performance.
Evil psychologist.
Everyone in that movie is far more interesting than anyone in this movie.
How many faces
Cooper is
are
miscast. This is it. This feels like late era Tim Burton. Do you know what I mean? Like visually interesting, but bereft of meaning. So
I could,
That's
if
not.
You want me to go in on Nightmare Alley for a half hour? I'd love to, but we don't have.
I have to say, I don't think that's that bad of a comparison.
Yeah, yeah, I could definitely see that. Oh man, imagine
I'm so glad to see Del Toro get more mainstream attention and more awards love, but he's yet to make something that hits me as hard as Pan's Labyrinth hit me.
Yeah, it's kind of like that was his blank check that he then has been kind of just like doing whatever he wants for the last, you know, two decades.
I mean,
since then.
Can have the conversation about like dozens of filmmakers and writers and artists where like the early stuff was the best, and then once they got successful, they got less interesting. That's kind of a recurring theme.
Yeah, I have to say, I haven't seen the original Nightmare Alley, and I'm very excited for you to tell me that it's much better than this, because I liked this. Okay, I liked this like decently, but it definitely had its problems, and the extra hour definitely was a factor. And so I would really like to see a cleaner, leaner, better version of this movie. So happy exists.
I accepted Bradley Cooper's existence for the duration of the film. That in and of itself is an achievement.
He is indeed in the film. Doing stuff. The only difference, I will say, the only advantage that the new one has is that it is not produced under the production code, so it can have the it can go certain places that the novel did that the other one just can't, it's not allowed to do.
You mean like in terms of graphicness?
No, just like certain story points, if you will, not to spoil anything, but you know, there's just things that they can do that the old one couldn't. I don't think they would have been allowed to do, realistically.
Yeah.
And I think my biggest lesson from watching that film is that I just need to watch more classic noir films, because I really, really like that genre. And every time that I watch anything in it, whether it's like a kind of modern retelling of a noir, or if I actually like dive deep and watch a noir, I always love it. So I just need to just like, you know, pound it out on Criterion one month.
I think that is on Criterion. They definitely released a very beautiful disc last year that is worth buying, honestly, a sight unseen.
Marissa, is there any other sort of impacts that you saw in the awards race for COVID this year? Anything that kind of jumped out at you in like a positive or negative way?
I mean, this might have happened anyway, but I don't think it would have happened so quickly. And I mean, I guess we could see a little bit of it last year, but it just feels really accelerated now. Is that like half of these Best Picture nominees, for instance, are like came out either exclusively on streaming or simultaneously streaming service and theaters at the same time for like a limited run. And I'm sure that would have been happening anyway in the next 10 years or so, but this year feels like a leap from last year, which feels like a huge leap from like, let's say 10 years ago when people were like, should a Netflix film even be considered, you know, for an Oscar? And now we've got like what, two in the Best Picture race?
Yeah.
So.
Plus an Apple film and you know, and these
and
HBO,
then a lot of these a lot of these came out on HBO first. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think that's the main difference that I see. It's not so much the films themselves that have been altered, but the accessibility. Because I mean, you know, let's be honest, for at least a decade now, the technology to make all these movies much more accessible, much quicker, has been there and has been broadly accessible to a wide audience. It was just deliberately ignored or not taken advantage of, because, you know, doing air quotes now, that's not the way movies work. And so, yeah, I think there's been a huge condensing of the timeline, a timeline that maybe would have taken 10 to 15 years to play out. We've seen it happen within 2 years. Yeah. And I have to say, at least as far as movies are concerned, that's a positive effect that the pandemic has had. I think it's good to have release schedules that are more condensed, you know, not stagger global releases across 6 months, but, you know, either at the same simultaneously or over a few weeks. And moving much more quickly to have them available on streaming services, because it means more people are able to see them and more people can discover, you know, what they like.
Yeah, that's always the balance, though, right? Because it's like it's definitely more accessible if they're on streaming services, but you're making it less easy for people to see them in theaters. And, you know, that is an important way to watch a film. It's not the most important thing, but it certainly matters. And, you know, you worry about the fact that, like, all of these movies are available either immediately when they're out in theaters, or you just have to wait a couple of weeks before they're available at home. And you worry what's going to happen to theaters long term if that continues to occur.
I have to say, I'm less worried about that, because I feel that's one of those things where for people who value it, there will always be enough people who will recognize the value and will be willing to spend the money. And in some cases, they might actually even be more willing to spend the money to go out and see it if they saw it on streaming and thought, oh, I really love that movie, but it'd probably be even better on the big screen. Like, I did not need to go see Nomadland a second time in theaters, because I watched it via streaming, you know, in order for us to do a review of it. But I was gung-ho about seeing it again, because I knew how great it was and I wanted to get that more authentic experience, and it was absolutely worth it. I gained an even greater appreciation of the film. So there will always be people like that. I see it as sort of an analog to, you know, I think something that you look at the huge explosion that there's been in podcasts, like what we're doing here. I mean, what are podcasts? It's basically the same thing as what the original radio programs in the 20s, 30s, and 40s were. You're just hearing voices and music and sound effects. You're not watching a video. You're not reading a text. You just need something to play audio in order to listen to a podcast. So it's the modern form of a radio. You know, we're not carrying a classic radio around, but that fundamental that type of art that is just audio and nothing else, you know, a new generation has been able to find their way to that in the way that's most accessible to them.
Yeah, I guess we'll have to see over the next few years. This is definitely going to be a long-term conversation that is not condensed just to this Oscar season. But it is true that many old-time Oscar voters, at least, do consider Netflix just a perennial villain at this point. But I'm curious for you guys, every year, it seems, there's at least one sort of film or campaign that makes film Twitter really upset at the very least. And we kind of say, like, oh, no, why is this happening? Good movies are being forgotten because of this thing. And I'm curious if there's anything jumping out to you. I'm going to start with you, Justin, this year in terms of quote unquote Oscar villains.
I would say Don't Look Up seems like the one to me. Again, a film I haven't seen yet. I feel like I've been putting it off to a certain extent at this point. I feel like I've heard a lot of great things and a lot of savage criticism of it. I feel like where I've heard more of those like middling reviews have been like from people I know, which has been interesting. Like, it seems like the press this is given is very polarizing, but then I talk to people and it seems like it's more measured and more nuanced. I know there was the whole thing. I really, you know, I think this probably helped maybe make it more of a villain, but the whole thing with Adam McKay and that interview, I think, didn't really help it in that regard. I don't know. I couldn't help but read some of that and just think, like, are you just like, maybe you just made a bad movie that has good intentions. This wouldn't be the first time that it happened. Again, sight unseen, can't yet make that judgment myself. But I just wondered if his response to the criticism, and I'm sure there's plenty of criticism that is unwarranted and goes too far. At the same time, just because you make a movie with good intentions that's on the right side of history doesn't mean you made a good movie. And I just wish there were more like like, I wish he'd gotten a little more pressure on that. Like, that is, that again, not the first time this would have happened. And I just kind of think, like, it just, I don't know. And maybe it's also because McKay is someone I feel like I think is getting far more attention than I think he really deserves, honestly, as a filmmaker at this point. He's not one of my favorites. I don't know if I need to stress how much I hated Vice. But
Vice, like, is so bad.
It kind of feels like he peaked with The Big Short and he's just making the same movie over and over again.
And that's a film, like, I actually was, like, rewatching scenes from that movie recently and, like, oh man, this was, like, really good and, like, was felt like
the Big Short?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh no, that completely just holds up.
You know, I think I just feel like with this movie, though, with Don't Look Up, it seems like there's a lot more chatter about it and not always in a very constructive way, to be honest. So I that's where I'm going with my
thing. More chatter than there is discourse, you could say. I have to say, I listened to Sean Fennessy on the Big Picture podcast, and he said the worst part about this movie getting a bunch of nominations is that he has to spend several more months of Adam McKay tweeting at him about how he doesn't care enough about climate change. And he's like, no, that's not the problem. I do care. I just don't like this movie.
Marissa, what do you think? I don't actually know what you think about Don't Look Up in the first place. And I'm curious if you think that it is the big Oscar villain of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly agree with everything Justin said, even though he hasn't seen it. I will say I work in extremes, and you guys know that. I've said that many times on the pod. And I just think it's, like, incoherent for the most part, like, as a piece of filmmaking. Like, the editing nomination to me is wild for that film, because it's like, yeah, I guess it has the most editing of any film in this year, but is it good? I wouldn't say that. I don't know. I just think I also care about climate change, but there's just better ways to do it that feel a little less condescending and also doesn't embarrass every actor in it except for Jennifer Lawrence, oddly enough. I mean, it's great to see her back.
Yeah, she's great.
Great to see her back, and she outclasses everyone in the thing. It's very strange, actually.
Also, once again,
we could go further back on Adam McKay's peak. It was probably Step Brothers.
Yeah, see, that's a movie that everyone likes more than I do, so I can't be with you on that. I just, that when I watched that, everybody was like, oh, you have to see it, it's so funny, and I watched it, and I was like, yeah. So the whole joke is that, like, they're adults, but they act like kids, like, that's the entire thing.
That's how I feel about the
Wait, isn't that what the Jackass movie franchise is?
No, that is, they're adults, but they act like sociopaths, or masochists.
You're saying kids aren't sociopaths?
I mean, sometimes.
So here's what's holding me back from seeing Don't Look Up. I already know the premise. It's about, you know, it's an analog to climate change. There's a big disaster coming. The people in the know are trying to raise awareness, and the whole, you know, modern post-capitalist society just doesn't care. I'm already so plugged into that here in the real world that it makes me depressed on a regular basis. So I don't want to, if I'm going to take 2 hours to watch a movie, I don't want to submit myself to a repeat of that experience unless there's, like, something else, unless there's, like, there's something new to the take being on it. And from everything I've heard, that's all the movie is. It's, oh, there's a catastrophe, but people are too distracted to care. I'm like, and the sense I'm getting is that the movie does not do anything interesting. It doesn't have an alternate take on that. It doesn't have something to add to that discussion other than just, oh, isn't modern distraction culture dumb? I'm like, I know. No. I don't need to spend 2 hours being reminded of that. I'm depressed enough as it is.
Yeah, that's the major issue with it rhetorically, is that it's not saying anything new to the people who would watch it. So my question is, like, who does he think it's for, and whose mind does he think he's going to change, Adam McKay?
I guarantee the Fox News crowd is not going to watch it.
Precisely. So then who is it, like... You know, Adam McKay clearly thinks he's doing world-changing stuff here, but for whom and where? Like, where are the, show me the people who are, like, you know, falling on their knees in front of their computer after watching Don't Look Up and being like, my whole existence is different now. I will recycle everything.
Yeah, it's the, like, same Adam people McKay, who he needed to tell that Dick Cheney was bad. Like, who's like, did you know that he was evil? And, like, yeah, like, hey, we were alive in 2005. We know.
He burst through the wall of the Academy Kool-Aid style. Guys, there were no WMDs.
Yeah, I agree with most of. I think I was probably the most positive of the people who. Well, I guess Justin, I know you still haven't seen it, but I think I was a little bit more positive than Marissa on the movie. I think for me, it's more just like it's not as bad as the people who say it's the worst film that's ever been made, and it's not as good as the people who say it's the best political satire since the
Dr. How to Strangelove or something.
Yeah, Strangelove.
Like that, it's just like wild to me, like the crazy divergence and opinions that this movie has. I think it's like just okay, and most people I know who watch it say that it's like just okay, like it has some funny parts, mm-hmm. it has some bad parts, and it's like got a lot of everything, so there's enough to kind of keep you going. But yeah, I've been very happy to see that it hasn't gotten enough of the precursor nominations and guild support to suggest that it's really going to be a major best picture winner, because I just don't think I can handle a month and a half of it being like in the best picture race, and that and the discourse that we had in December kind of revamping again. That would be very insufferable, and I hope that that doesn't happen.
I'm checking now. It did not get a screenplay nomination.
No, it did get a screenplay nomination. It's original screenplay.
Did it?
So it got a best original screenplay, but didn't get director.
Oh,
it didn't get any acting nominations, which is pretty notable since there's some pretty big stars in it, and it didn't get any support from the acting branch, and that's a pretty rough it's really difficult for a movie that has that many famous people that awards voters like to not get any acting nominations. That kind of suggests that it doesn't have a huge groundswell of support, even if it got the best picture nomination.
What else do we have in editing? We also got Dune, King Richard, The Power of the Dog, Tick Tick. Oh, Tick Tick Boom was also nominated for editing. So Tick Tick Boom had two nominations.
Oh, okay. I mean, that's a deserving nomination, because the editing in Tick Tick Boom is really kind of, they're really doing a lot. It's like four different stories inside of itself. You know, it's like really kind of narratively ambitious in that way. So I'm happy to see that.
I feel like the classic Academy storyline would be The Power of the Dog wins editing, and that's the precursor to it winning Best Director and Best Film.
That is often how it goes, although less and less these days, I feel.
That would be, in air quotes, the classic Academy pathway.
But speaking of nominations more specifically, let's get into the thing that everyone likes to talk about the most when it comes to Oscars, snubs. Noah, what is one snub that really jumped out to you in this list of nominations?
Well, we got Kirsten Arianna from West Side Story and Spencer. So those were, out of the acting nominations, those are the ones that I cared the most about. It was disappointing to see none of the newcomers from Licorice Pizza get anything, because I do like seeing, you know, good breakthrough performances from fresh faces also getting awards recognition. It usually, it very often doesn't happen, but I think that was definitely a disappointment. Yeah, I think that was the main one. There wasn't too much that I could say that I was unhappy about. I was a little bit surprised that Spencer did not get more nominations. And I do think Johnny Greenwood's score is one of the best of the year. So to have that not be in the running is, well, he did get a nomination for Power of the Dog.
Yeah, it's like a good score, but like he did get in more. With the Power of the Dog score. So I think he kind of like stole his own votes there.
Now, in general, there was nothing that really broke my heart. There were a couple of movies that are going to be higher up. I'm in the process of doing my top 10 list. There's a couple of stuff there where I'm like, I don't know, it would have been nice to see these movies get a little bit more recognition. But I mean, one of my top movies is going to be Dune, and that got like 10 nominations. So I really can't complain.
Yeah.
And so some people are up in arms about Villanueva not getting nominated for Best Director. I'm not ride or die for Villanueva. I'm not that. I was one of those people who was very ornery for a while about how Christopher Nolan never got a Best Director nod, but then Dunkirk fixed that. So I can't say that that's it's definitely a snub, but it's not a snub that I'm like bothered by.
Justin, how about you? Are there any snubs that bothered you?
So
you alluded to a couple acting snubs in our opening segment.
Yeah, well, it's funny because I was actually originally that was what I was going to go with. And then I was looking at the nominees. I was like, well, this was a crowded field, and like, who would I take out? And there seems to be a lot of push for some of the actors that I would have thought would have been taken out. So I'm kind of like, maybe I shouldn't go here. So I actually went somewhere else for this one. I went with a film that I just caught up with recently that I think deserved, and it did get some nominations. It's a film that I absolutely loved, The Lost Daughter, which I know, Alex, you're a huge fan of. I read your review as well, Marissa, on the Pop Break, and it seems like you were a fan as well. And in addition, like I said, it did get some nominations. It was nominated for Lead Actress, Supporting Actress, and Adapted Screenplay. At the same time, on a personal level, I would have loved to have seen it in Best Picture and especially Best Director. It's not a surprise to me that it didn't make these, but I think it would have been more satisfying for me because I was just so surprised by it. It's a psychologically complex film that often plays like a thriller or even a horror movie. It was much more unnerving than I ever expected it to be. And I would say just as a directorial effort, to me, it feels less like a debut and more like the culmination of some larger body of work. There's some really impressive things she does visually. I think especially the use of focus is really something that jumps out to me. The way she cuts between sort of the distance of her shots is really fascinating. And you know, it's funny I was looking at her. I assumed she had directed more TV, and I looked at her credits on IMDb, and she only has one previous directorial credit to this, which was like a series of short films made during the pandemic, and she made one of them and that's it. So it's even more impressive to me that she was able to make this.
She's really great. I would have liked to see her in director as well, especially over someone like Kenneth Branagh, but I was happy to see that her work was at least recognized with the Best Adapted Screenplay nomination. And I think she honestly has an outside chance of being competitive in that category. And it's a very competitive category. So I'm at least happy to see that.
What's the history on women winning in the screenplay category? Does someone have that off the top of their head?
I don't. I know this is the first time since 1992 that three women were nominated in adapted screenplay specifically, but I don't know how often women have won in that role.
I'm going to Google that while we're chatting.
That stat is courtesy of Joe Reed and his Vanity Fair Oscar nomination coverage, which is a great read if anyone is interested. But yeah, I totally agree. I'm just glad that the movie didn't get boiled down to just the Olivia Colman performance and then forgotten everywhere else, because I feel like in other years that definitely could have happened. But if it was up to me, it would be leading the pack with 15 nominations because it's like the best movie of the year.
There is a Wikipedia page, list of female Academy Award winners and nominees for non-gendered categories.
Okay.
Just so as you know.
All right. Well, people can check that out in their own time. In the meantime, Marissa, what snub jumped out to you the most this year?
I think The Lost Daughter, is one of them, actually. Like, I would have loved to have seen all three women in that, Dakota Johnson as well, nominated, because they're all three performances are so visceral and interesting and part of why that film works so well. And yeah, I think Maggie, as a directorial debut, it's like so self-assured and so good. And maybe if that film had come out a little earlier, possibly, it might have gotten been able to build up the buzz for her to get that. But I do hope we see more of her directing, because man, what a first feature. I think the big snubs are, the biggest snub is the Lady Gaga situation with House of Gucci. Not just because she was the only person nominated for every precursor award, but because she has been out there on these streets campaigning.
Are you ride or die for House of Gucci?
No, I actually don't really care very much, but like, she's been out there on those streets campaigning like no one has ever campaigned in her entire life.
She wanted it
so bad. And maybe that's why, like, ultimately the people were like, chill out. But it's so strange to me that she wasn't nominated, because like every precursor award, and there was like a period of time, a dark period of time, where it looked like, you know, she was like, Kristen Stewart wasn't nominated for SAG, so everybody was like, oh, she's just not going to win or even be nominated possibly. And it was like, I guess Lady Gaga's going to win the Oscar now. And then she's not even included. Like, that is, I would pay to hear the backstage like tea on all of that, because I just don't understand like what happened there, because the industry seems to like her, you know, generally. So I just don't know what happened there. I find it fascinating. Like, I don't know if it would have been my best performance of the year. I don't know. I mean, I'm ride or die for Kristen Stewart. I would kill for that woman and have said that for many years. So like, if she doesn't win on Oscar night, I will be devastated and like enter into a stages of grief that will take months to get over, possibly years. But like, yeah,
I'm in
the
same boat. I'm definitely pulling for her.
So you guys will be like Kristen Stewart in Spencer if Kristen Stewart in Spencer doesn't win Best Actress.
I will cut my arm open with a cord cutter.
Just keep the ghost of Anne Boleyn out of your bedroom. That's all I have to say. I think that you're definitely right about the Gaga snub, but I think this is one of those instances where somebody campaigned themselves out of a nomination. Yeah. This happens every so often where someone just comes off so thirsty for an Oscar and the voters just kind of like wrap them on the knuckles and say like, no, like chill out, come back to us next year when you don't want it so much. And I mean, you just have to look at the looks in all of her co-interviewees' faces whenever she said anything in one of those big panel discussions. See that she was kind of doing too much.
Everyone's faces in that one Zoom where she's like, she's talking about like eating food on set and nobody goes with her on whatever journey she goes on. Well,
yeah, because she said that. Yeah,
for the rest of my life.
If you haven't seen it, she's like, you know, I just get like so into the scene that sometimes, you know, I'm drinking like the prop alcohol, which is like water, and I sometimes get drunk off of it. Do you guys ever have that experience? And they're all just like, oh, sweetie, no.
I have not seen this.
Deafening silence. Silence that lasts so long and so profoundly that like millennia pass. It's so brutal.
I think
Not even Jared Leto sticks up for her? Like, oh, well, baby.
She wasn't there. It was a bunch of other actresses who were just like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, just actresses.
Yeah. Chris, I think that Kirsten Dunst was my favorite reaction in that video. Because you could tell she just wanted to like pat her on the head and just be like, oh, sweetie, it's okay.
Right, because she's worked for so long and she just will not. She just is not ready for that bullshit. And I think she starts laughing. It's like, oh, yeah. God.
But yeah,
I double checked. She did win an Oscar for the Shallow song.
She did, but that's not an acting nomination. And that's
no, she wants
about.
An acting Oscar. Yeah.
She's not gonna settle for a music Oscar.
Yeah,
and she shouldn't. She's a great I think she's the best part of that movie. I don't think that movie is particularly good, and I would absolutely not have nominated her for Best Actress. But I do think she's the best part of it. I think that. And whatever performance she has done on this campaign cycle as like the most try-hard Oscar campaigner in history, I think also deserves an award of some sort of performance art venue somewhere.
Certainly something. Something should be acknowledged.
Yeah, and I mean, to be fair, you know, sort of like the communications major at TCNJ, the best original song Oscar is the joke Oscar.
I mean, sometimes it's a really competitive race and sometimes it's really not. So it's one of those categories that really depends on the year. And the year that she won it, it was pretty competitive.
It's one of those ones where you get a lot of junk nominations where it's just like, we literally just threw this together in 2 minutes to get one extra Oscar nomination.
Yeah, and yet Lin-Manuel Miranda has been beating at that door for like a decade now. So,
well, this is he only got his second nomination there this year.
I know, but he's wanted it hard. For me, I'm going to say some snubs quickly. I was really surprised that Ruth Negga didn't get in. It really seemed like she was going to in Best Supporting Actress, and I was disappointed to see that she didn't get there because she's really great in that film, and she's a great actress who I think has a lot more range than people realize if they've only seen her in Loving and a few of those other movies, and I think this gives another interesting side to her. And I think if you want another interesting side of her, you can watch the first two seasons of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is currently streaming on Disney Plus, where she plays a very fun character who has a very upsetting thing happen to her towards the end of the
season. Thank you for reminding me, Alex. Passing is definitely a film that got snubbed in a lot of places.
Yeah, big time.
Yeah. It also definitely should have been an adapted screenplay, but that was a tough category, but I would have put it in over Coda. I know Coda is like the Sundance darling of the season, but I would have definitely put Passing over Coda in adapted screenplay.
Cinematography too. I mean, incredible stuff.
Yeah, they always go for black and white. So I'm very surprised that they didn't here when the black and white is so like central to you know,
it's
the film.
It's literally the point.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that, so that was passing in general, definitely a big upsetment. I was a little sad to see that Bradley Cooper didn't get in for supporting, because I think that would have been a really fun nomination. I wouldn't have given him the win, but it would have been a fun nomination for him. Mike Feist and Rachel Zegler.
Are you talking about Nightmare Alley or John Peters?
West Side Story are so fantastic, and seeing them not get any recognition is very sad. But the big snub that I'm going to go with is the Kushner adaptation of the West Side Story script not getting in. That seems insane to me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you got a point there.
Because that is what ultimately convinced me that the it was worth it to remake that film, is how good that screenplay is.
And he's, you know, Kushner's been around. He gets nominated a lot. It's not like he's, you know, unloved by the Academy.
Is it possible that the fact that it is a musical and is using existing songs, something that counted against it? Because I recognize that this is supposed to be for the screenplay itself. But I wonder if the Academy was aware of that. Like, I just wonder if was maybe too much of a familiarity with the existing material, where it almost was like, this is, you know, how much was actually adapted kind of thing. And I do think there are significant, like, I do think there are some really interesting changes. But I wonder if that's something that they were able to pick up on, or if they just kind of like, oh, well, it's West Side Story again. So how much of an adaptation, how much work actually went into the adaptation?
I mean, yeah, anyone who has seen both versions will instantly know that a lot of stuff was altered. A lot.
But if you haven't watched the original West Side Story in like 30 years, you might not be willing to like be generous to the person who did this adaptation, I guess. Like, that would be I think the easiest explanation. But still, you would think that Tony Kushner is just like a slam dunk nomination for anything that he's going to do, you know? Like,
yeah,
I know he hasn't
mean.
Won
like,
yet, but he
I
seems
mean,
like
he
should be in the club.
Been tag teaming for a while now.
I mean, he got that. It's still crazy that he didn't get adapted for Lincoln. You would have really thought that he would have gotten that given how much they loved Lincoln, but I didn't love Lincoln that much, so I'm not that upset about it. But I did love West Side Story, and I thought that his adaptation was fantastic. So it was very sad to see it not get honored. Again, because, you know, I don't know. I think Coda, like, the screenplay is one of the worst things about that movie. What do you guys think? Like, how do you feel about that adapted screenplay?
I have not seen
Coda,
so I'm
I have seen
out of that
Coda,
discussion.
And yeah, I can confirm. I think, like, I mean, it is very much the film that you expect it to be, and I don't think that necessarily merits, you know, accolades for its screenplay. I think where it really succeeds for me is in the performances, mostly.
Yeah. Marissa, what do you think about that?
I mean, I think it's fine. I really don't think of either way about it, honestly. I don't think it's a bad screenplay, necessarily. It's a conventional screenplay, certainly, but I think that is why it ultimately works. And has probably connected with people. Like, if I compare it to something that is also very conventional and has a sort of sentimentality that also got a nomination, but for original, like Belfast, I think it's far better than that.
Yeah, I would definitely give it the nomination over Belfast. If they were in the same category, I would definitely give it over that. It just, Coda's screenplay just has that feeling where it's like, it got too many notes and it just agreed to accept all of them. You know what I mean? Like,
well, too many notes.
But, that's the lowest point of this recording. Cause now we're going to move into our pleasant surprises, which is something that I think we all are going to feel much better about discussing. And so Noah, I'm actually going to start with you. What was your pleasant surprise on Oscar nomination morning? Other than Leslie Jordan being one of the people giving the nominations for some reason, which was my pleasant surprise.
The fact that Ariana, I mean, okay, no, I'm not surprised that Ariana got nominated for Anita. I was worried that she would get snubbed, but it was a pretty safe bet that she would at least get nominated. I was pleasantly surprised that Mitchell's and the Machines did not get overlooked for Best Animated Feature, because I've internalized that, you know, whatever the best this has gotten more unfair as the years have gone on, but generally speaking, I've often kind of internalized that the best in animation is going to get neglected from the Academy. I mean, Mitchell's and the Machines is definitely not a favorite to win the category because you've got freaking three Disney movies in the running. But
It could win. It has won basically like all the critics awards. So I think there's a really strong chance that it could win over my beloved Luca, which would make me feel very sad.
I would have to say, I mean, I still haven't seen it and I do want to see it. I was surprised to see another East Asian movie in Drive My Car, you know, break out of the international feature film straitjacket again. And I definitely don't think it's going to be another Parasite, but it's a signal for me that Parasite was not just a one-off, and there is a more global awareness that really is starting to take root in the Academy, and that the diversification efforts that they've been putting in place over the past, you know, 5-6 years are actually starting to bear some fruit. So that for me was a pleasant surprise in terms of what it signals for the Academy going forward, in terms of what types of movies get recognized. And yeah, and some people have been complaining about, oh, that's not what's going to get more viewers to tune in on Academy Night. And I'm like, if that's the only barometer of success, then we're kind of missing the forest for the trees, guys.
Yeah, I like nominate Drive My Car and then just put Zendaya and Tom Holland on stage as host, and like you solve your problems. I don't understand why this is so hard.
They could award Best Picture to Green Book again for all I care. I would watch that show.
Let's not. I mean, they would if they could, so let's not give them that idea. Justin, yeah, how about you? What was your best surprise?
So I actually went in the same direction as Noah. I went with Drive My Car getting not just nominated for international feature film, but also director, adapted screenplay, and best picture. And I think the surprise to me here is the film itself getting these nominations, because I don't like, this is a 3-hour movie that is slow, dense, and very deliberate.
And it's not called The Irishman.
And yes, very true. And it's in not just in Japanese, but in several other languages as well. And that's actually part of its conceit. So all those factors compared to something like Parasite, which I think is probably more accessible. And that's not to say that it's less, you know, that Parasite is a less, you know, challenging movie because of that. But I do think it's a much more viscerally thrilling movie than something like Drive My Car. It's, you know, I think Drive My Car seems like the kind of thing that would test a lot of, especially older Academy voters' patience. It doesn't feel traditional in that way. And so I was very surprised to see it. I was less surprised to see it in international feature film, but surprised to see it really get some love in some of the other categories. That was the big surprise to me. I almost to a point where I start to wonder, like, are people going purely by reputation at this point, or have they actually sat through all 3 hours of this movie and said, yes, this is one of the best pictures of the year? Because it's, you know, it's a sit. It's not an easy film. I think that's why I'm just so surprised by it. And I've seen it. I feel like I'm one of those people who, like, maybe admires it in some way more than loves it. Like, I don't know if it's going to be, like, one of my most loved films of the year. But at the same time, I think it is deserving of the acclaim that it's getting. I was just surprised to see it so honored amongst all these categories based on the kind of film that it is. And I think that's why it was a surprise.
Yeah, it had the profile of one of those movies that tops all of the critics' lists, but then gets snubbed by the Oscars and everybody bemoans the state of the critical, like, faculties of the Oscar voters. But that's not what happened. They did it. And I think that there was, like, a really big push in the last month to make people respect the movie and at least consider it. And I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of people voted for it without actually watching it, because that would not be the first time that happened in the Oscars. But usually that happens for the worst, and bad things get nominated because of that. So I think we should just take this as a win and not really ask too many questions. Marissa, what about you? What was your pleasant snub or pleasant surprise?
I was like, I don't know. I'm just thrilled to see No Time to Die nominated for anything, because I think, you know, I'm like a big Bond person. And I just thought it was
the full spectrum here today.
Yeah. I just thought it was like one of the best Bond films that I could have imagined realistically. It just surprised me, and it's really well made. Like, you know, I mean, she never would have gotten nominated, but like one of the best supporting actress roles that I saw this year was Ana de Armas in that. So I don't know. It's just nice to see it nominated in any way, even though it's for like below the line stuff.
Yeah, I totally agree. Ana de Armas is so great in that movie. And it's so wild that like she's only in the movie because Daniel Craig liked working with her so much on Knives Out that he like got the producers to give her that role, like to make a role for her. Because that was, I don't know if everyone knows this, but that all the stuff that she did in that movie was originally supposed to go to Jeffrey Wright for the Felix Leiter character. And then Daniel Craig was like, we got to get this woman in this movie because she's fantastic. And they were like, all right, fine. We'll cut the Felix Leiter character's story down a bit and we'll let her be in that action scene instead. And then she's like literally the best thing about the movie. And all anyone who watches that movie talks about when it's over, like a movie where, spoiler alert, James Bond dies. Yeah. All anybody I've spoken to about that movie has like wants to talk about afterwards, is like how great Ana de Armas is in it. So I think that's like, yeah, in another world, I would definitely have supported her for our best supporting actress nomination.
In another world, it would be like such a great, like, you know, such a shoe-in, but it's not the kind of thing that it's too big of a, it's such a commercial picture fun thing and such a fun performance. And of course it wouldn't get nominated, but you know, I'm just happy to see it in like, you know, best sound or whatever the hell. It's some visual effects.
It's visual
like,
effects.
Visual effects.
Yeah. 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 And I guess the song too. So
I learned today that it's the first Bond movie to get a visual effects nomination since Moonraker. So that's a interesting historical
Moonraker
stat.
Has groundbreaking stuff. There was groundbreaking stuff.
Okay. I've never heard of that title, but at the same time, it does not surprise me at all that that's the title of a James Bond movie.
Well, they have to do, because it's from one of the books too. There are visual effects in that are imagining what space travel looks like before we'd actually had any idea what a rocket looked like going up, basically. And it's like anti-gravity and stuff, and like fake rockets with like taking off with like salt coming out, but it looks like a real rocket launch. It's fantastic. That's a great movie.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, I can't say I've seen it, but I've definitely heard interesting things about it. So I'm glad to know that you are a fan. As for me, my pleasant surprise, there's a couple of things on there on my list. Like, for instance, I was pleasantly surprised that Being the Carters didn't get a Best Picture nomination, because that would have been very annoying. As a huge fan of Aaron Sorkin, I am not afraid to say when he doesn't always hit the mark, and Being the Ricardos is fine. It's not a terrible, some people were like, this is an abomination, and that's like way overstating it. It's totally fine, but I'm tired of fine movies getting nominated for Best Picture, so I'm happy that that didn't happen. But my big pleasant surprise on Oscar morning was something that I really wasn't even anticipating. There was not a thought in my mind that it was going to happen. When it did, I was so happy, and it was when Jessie Buckley got nominated for Best Supporting Actress for mm-hmm. The Lost Daughter, because she's so great in that movie. I think she gives such an incredibly compelling performance as the younger version of Olivia Colman, and I think it's so interesting the ways in which she channels Olivia Colman as an actress and the ways in which she makes that role her own as well. And it balances so well to the point where you really feel like you're seeing a younger version of this other character that you're watching without it feeling like she's just kind of like trying to mimic mannerisms and things like that. And it's such a it's a really difficult performance, I think, for a lot of people to watch, because it's this young mother who doesn't act the way a lot of young mothers act, and the film gives her the space to do that without judgment. And I think that it's really a high wire act to walk for a lot of viewers. And I think that she's just so excellent in it, and she just handles all of that material so well. And I was so with her from the beginning of to the end of her arc, and I've been a big fan of hers for the last few years. I think, you know, she came in big with Wild Rose, and that was a movie that mm-hmm. a lot of people were talking about, and I think she did a really good job with that. And she's really good in, I think I'm thinking of Ending Things, which is a movie that I'm kind of mixed on, but she's definitely really good in it. And she's just like this very exciting young actress, and I think it's going to be very interesting to see what an Oscar nomination can do for her career moving forward. So I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, I absolutely echo that. It's funny because going in, I was like, as a huge fan, I mean, if I don't know, for people who've listened to this podcast, they know how much a fan of Jessie Buckley I am. I mean, she's like my queen. So I was a little bit like trepidatious, being like, wait, she's playing a young Olivia Colman? That just doesn't, like, I love both those actresses, but I just don't see them as similar in any way. And I think you're right. I do think there's a way in which she makes it her own. There's a way in which I did see some of that like channeling of her in that performance. It feels like a younger version of that character. And it feels like its own person in that moment. It doesn't just feel like impersonation. It's really remarkable. And, you know, in a very remarkable film, it's just one of the many remarkable things about it.
Fully agree. Marisa, were you surprised by the Buckley nomination, or did you feel like that was coming?
No, not at all. But I was pleasantly surprised. Cause I didn't think it was going to happen at all. I really did think it was just going to be Colman for that film. But what a thrill to see it, because yeah, I mean, I saw her for the first time in Wild Rose and was like, damn, this girl is going to be a star someday. Like, what a performance. Yeah. So it's great to see that happen, because I hope it opens like more doors for her and she just keeps, you know, working and working and working and eventually wins that Oscar, because she's really something.
Yeah, fully agree. Now we're going to move on into our next segment, our second to last segment of the episode, where we talk about Best Picture. Last year, we all were very boring in choosing the exact same movie, which was, of course, Nomadland. But it's good to be boring sometimes, because we were all correct. So all four of us said Nomadland was going to win Best Picture, and all of us were correct. And so that's why I'm bringing that up instead of our bold prediction from last year.
but what was our bold prediction?
Well, we'll just leave that for our viewers or for our listeners to listen to last year's episode to find out.
I see what you did there.
But Noah, let's start with you. Who do you think is going to win Best Picture this year? It's a competitive race, but there's definitely one front runner amongst the pack. So I'm curious what you think is going to win.
I said it earlier. The conventional front runner is The Power of the Dog. I think it would be pretty bonkers if Dune were, it's not going to happen. It would be pretty bonkers if Dune were to win Best Picture. I think that would be the out there result that would kind of maybe impress me the most. Be like, okay, the Academy went there. but that's definitely not going to happen. I could see either The Power of the Dog, Belfast, or West Side Story ending up winning. I feel like those three, just based on what the Academy usually does, those three are the most likely winners. I have not seen Coda or Drive My Car or King Richard yet, so like I just can't offer an opinion to any of those movies.
But if you had to narrow it down to one, which one would you pick?
I don't know. I think West Side Story could pull an upset.
All right, so Noah's got West Side Story. Justin, how about you?
I think Noah's right that the conventional wisdom does seem to be Power of the Dog at this point. But I'm not going to go there. I'm going to predict
Conventional
Belfast.
Wisdom died of COVID.
for a few reasons. One, it won People's Choice Awards at the Toronto International Film Festival, which maybe hasn't been as much of a barometer the last few years, at least from what I was seeing. In the past, it really has been. But I will say, I think it's something that can only help and not hurt. I also just think, as a film, compared to something like Power of the Dog, I think it's going to... My perception of it, again, not having seen Belfast, but having seen Power of the Dog.
having seen the trailer approximately 20,000 times.
Yes, exactly. It just seems like a much more likable film than something like Power of the Dog. Power of the Dog is a very challenging movie psychologically. It's, again, very slow and deliberate, I think, in an utterly compelling way. Also, some other things that... I feel like there's some factors that are counting against Power of the Dog. One is no ensemble nomination at the SAGs, which I was really shocked by. And I know that can generally be a barometer for Best Picture. Also, it's a Netflix movie, guys. This would be the first time that a Netflix movie has won Best Picture. And we all know how the Academy feels about Netflix. They seem to be, I don't know, warming to them a little bit, but I still feel like there's some bitterness there. And I can't help but wonder if that, combined with some of the other things and just the thorniness. Like, I think even people who are fans of Power of the Dog would admit that it's like a very prickly movie. It's not going to be as accessible as something like Belfast. Belfast has a lot of things that I think Academy voters will like. It's a family drama, it's a historical piece, and it's a very likable cast. I just feel like it's less likely to alienate voters. And I could also see, I'll say this for it, I think I could see Belfast as a more likely second or third favorite for a lot of voters, as opposed to something like Power of the Dog.
Yeah,
I think
that's going to be people who really love that story.
Yeah, I think there's.
I think both of those movies are going to be very high. I think neither of those movies are going to be first on a lot of people's list, but I think they're going to be second, third, or fourth for most voters.
So all those reasons are why I'm thinking more Belfast at this point than Power of the Dog. Power of the Dog did have the most nominations. I think it has a lot going for it. I just feel like for the Academy, Belfast seems like a likelier choice.
Marissa, how about you?
Yeah, actually, I mean, I think Belfast is a really good choice for a number of reasons. I don't think the movie's very good, but it is people really like it. It's under 100 minutes. It's very sweet.
Oh,
it's
really?
It's filmed very well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's an easy watch. I think it's a cloying watch, but, you know, people really like it. I think it's I really think it's either going to be Belfast or Don't Look Up, frankly, because Belfast is just likable. Don't Look Up has the air of importance, if not the intelligence for it. And it also is really seemingly beloved by every like it's nominated for a SAG. It's not nominated for a BAFTA. It's nominated for this. I think there's a lot of enthusiasm behind it in a way that it could be in, you know, people's top three picks possibly. So I mean if I had a choice, I would want it to be West Side Story, but I'm just worried that it doesn't have the momentum I want it to have. So I kind of think it's going to be Belfast or Don't Look Up.
I also feel like a lot of voters could be thinking along the lines of, hey, let's give Spielberg another Oscar, you know, while we have the opportunity.
I'd love it.
Yeah, well, I'd be upset if Jane Campion didn't get the Best Director nomination, Best Director award over Spielberg, but I don't think that's happening. I think
she's pretty much the heavyweight.
For director. Yeah. And that could be a factor in not giving Power of the Dog Best Picture, or it could be a factor in giving it Best Picture. I'm going to go with the front runner. I'm going to go with the Power of the Dog. I know it's a Netflix movie. I think that the fact that it's a Netflix movie actually helps it in this particular race, because I think that Netflix has to choose basically between campaigning hard for one film or campaigning part of the way for two films, and because they're just not going to be able to put their muscle behind two Best Picture nominees and have full campaigns for both of them to win. And I think that because Power of the Dog is so out front of Don't Look Up, I think they're just going to shift their focus and really push Power of the Dog, and that will make it a lot harder for Don't Look Up, which I agree, even without the Best Director nomination, has a decent chance of being in the conversation. So I think that's going to really help it in terms of that. And I think when it comes to West Side Story, when you look at the acting branch, they really didn't award it pretty much anything except for that one supporting actress nomination. And so I think there really just isn't a huge amount of support. It didn't even get as many below the line nominations as I would have expected it to. So I think people just haven't warmed up to it in the way that we would have expected. Belfast, I think, is the one real contender that could push over the Power of the Dog. And certainly that fits the narrative that we've had for a while now of like feel good movie versus art movie. Who's going to win? And it always seems like it's like by a nose one way or the other. And I think this year it's going to go almost to Power of the Dog. Year. And I think that it's a really interesting film. It's a really transgressive film. It's the sort of film that I think a lot of people who have the patience to sit through it really like. And it's also the sort of film that I could see a lot of people voting for without watching based on reputation. And I think that's going to, or at least putting it as number two, where it's like, I really liked Nightmare Alley, but I also heard that The Power of the Dog is really good. So I'll put that as my number two. So I think that could be benefited from as well. So I'm going with The Power of the Dog. I actually, I just like tentatively filled out my Oscar ballot, and I like went heavy on Power of the Dog. So I'm just going all in on the Power of the Dog this year, and we'll see how badly that works out for me. But speaking of bold predictions, like that one, it's time for us to go around Robin and talk about our bold prediction for the year. And this is our last segment of every Oscar special, where we just kind of pick one category, or maybe sometimes one trend that we think is going to happen that maybe people aren't expecting or is a long shot, and or maybe it's a really competitive category where no one knows what's going to happen, and we make our bold prediction and try to defend it. So Marissa, I'm going to start with you. What is your bold prediction for the 2022 Oscars?
Oh, I mean, I think it's the Don't Look Up wins, honestly. That would be my my bold prediction. Really is that, you know, I think it's just the trend on these is like me going full chaos monster and saying that yes, that's gonna happen.
Justin, how about you? What's your bold prediction?
This was tough for me, honestly. Where I ended up going was I'm gonna say that Flea will win for documentary. Now, the smart money seems to be on Summer of Soul, and I get a lot of those arguments. That said, I'm wondering if this is the place where, like, Flea, which is nominated in three separate categories, I definitely don't think is going to win International Feature Film. You know, I think has a better shot at animated film, although it seems like Encanto is gaining a lot of traction there. I would think this might be the place to award it. You know, Summer of Soul, I think, is definitely something I could see being a crowd pleaser and appealing to a lot of the Academy. I will also say it has a lot of, it consists mostly of already captured footage in addition to new interviews. And I know traditionally within certain documentaries, that's seen as less of sort of the craft behind making a documentary, as opposed to something like Flea, which does use animation and is also like a very powerful, I think is maybe more clearly has like a narrative through line. So I guess that's right. So I think that's where I'm going to go for this one. I think just based on how much it's been awarded in some of the other categories, I feel like it has to win. And I think this is where it's most likely to win.
Well, Justin, I'm going to tell you that that was what my bold prediction was going to be, but since you took it, it obviously can't be that bold. So, Noah, how about you? What is your bold prediction?
Van Morrison wins an Oscar.
Oh, no.
I don't know. It feels like that's the craziest thing that I could imagine.
I hope. I mean,
if he's going to win, why did he have to win?
Van
now?
Morrison wins an Oscar and Licorice Pizza wins Best Picture.
Well, which one? Which one are you going with?
I think Van Morrison's crazier than Licorice Pizza winning Best Picture.
Oh, I think you just said Van Morrison's crazy. I'm like, yeah,
that's also, what else that is also true.
And that would be the best winner speech of the night.
I mean, I don't agree. It would be very best what he would say. Yeah, it seems like he may have, like, in order to attend the awards, that seems like they may have changed their policies to let him in because, you know, he is a famous not fan of vaccinations, as it turns out. And they've announced that they will only require a negative test and that you don't have to be vaccinated to attend the awards. So
it's a sign. They've already voted.
Yeah, it's a I don't know. I feel like that category is going to go to Lin-Manuel Miranda. I feel like how many times are they going to say no to him? It's going to happen with
they've
this Encanto.
No,
it's not
before.
It's not the song from Encanto that everyone likes the most. It's probably like the third or fourth best song, according to people who love that movie.
It was the song that I liked the most.
Oh, it was? Oh, okay. Well, that's good.
Yep.
I mean, everybody loves We Don't Talk About Bruno. That's like blowing up the Billboard charts.
I don't get it.
And then there's the Surface Pressure. A lot of people really like that one as well. And
did
I like that
like
one.
I like that one
well.
At all.
Well, so Noah is right in line with the Academy voters and with the Disney campaign orchestrators on that one. But yeah, I guess we'll see. For me, I guess I was going to say Flea because for all of the reasons that Justin said, and also because, you know, I just think that, but it's a bold prediction because Oscars love their music docs. Like they just really, really do. And so it's always an uphill battle when a well-reviewed music doc is up against anything else. But I just watched Flea last night and it just blew me away. And I think if anybody actually watches that movie, they would vote for it in every award that it's eligible in. A lot of people don't actually watch the documentaries. So It's hard to say. But since I can't go with that, I'm going to say that, Will Smith is the front runner for best actor. And I think that, Benedict Cumberbatch is seen as the most likely contender against him. Will Smith for King Richard, which we have not really mentioned at all in this entire conversation, and Benedict Cumberbatch for The Power of the Dog. But I'm going to say that I think that Denzel Washington has a decent chance to beat Will Smith for Best Actor for his role in The Tragedy of Macbeth, as Lord Macbeth, as he is credited, apparently, because he's fantastic. And this is a role that I think everyone who is in Hollywood has seen performed at least a handful of times. And I don't know, I think he brought something really interesting and surprising and dynamic to it, things that I wasn't expecting even for him. I'd like had a version of what I thought his version of Macbeth would be in my head. And I think this really surpassed what I was expecting. And I don't know, I think there's a chance. I think that there's always been a little bit of a bias against Will Smith because he's such a kind of commercial actor and a big star. And a lot of the times Oscars, they like to reward stars, but if a star is too big, then they say, well, you don't need an Oscar. And so that can oftentimes weirdly kind of go against them. So I think that that campaign is maybe a little bit softer than other people think. And I think that Denzel could sweep in and get it for the classic Shakespearean part.
Yeah, that's interesting. I thought you were going to go Andrew Garfield for a second there.
Oh, no. I mean, that would be wonderful, but that's not happening.
Yeah, no, I think as close as I could see that category going almost any number of ways, but not that. That's the Happy to Be Here nomination.
Yeah.
Yeah. If Tick, Tick, Boom showed up in other places, I think maybe it would have had a chance. But I think that it's a weirdly polarizing movie. A lot of people don't like that movie at all. So I think the nomination is the win.
I absolutely get certain viewers being turned off by the, you know, what the film is about and the style of the film as well. Like, it's one of those films where if a certain type of person says, oh, I hated that, like, I can't say it shocks me.
I will say, if he beats the odds and actually wins, it's a 100% chance that I'm going to cry when he gives his acceptance speech. Because I've heard him talk about this movie and how much it means to him, and like his mom tragically passed away right before the filming of the movie, and talks about how he tried to honor her memory as a performer this film. And so I think if he wins an Oscar for this, I think it'll just kind of like wreck him, and that'll wreck me, and then we'll all be crying together. But on that note, Marissa, since you're our guest, I'm going to give you our closing thought. Is there anything else that you want to add, anything that we didn't cover in this very long conversation about the Oscars before we close it up?
No, I mean, I will say I do support you on the idea that there are going to be some surprises on Oscar night, really. I think we're recording this before any of the bigger precursor stuff has happened, but I do think it's a little hard to predict. And I would love to see some surprises, not some horrible surprises, but I wouldn't mind certain, you know, I'm happy to see an almost completely random set of winners. The only one I'm tied to is Kristen Stewart. So really, if everything else is just a lot of fun, let's do that. Let's blow up everybody's Oscar ballots.
Yes. I was totally for that. I love that. I hope that happens.
That closing statement, blow it all up.
I mean, well, it is the year of Don't Look Up, so that would be appropriate. So that's going to do it for us this week. Marissa, thanks so much again for coming on. Is there anything that you'd like to plug? I know you've got a lot of Oscar stuff on the horizon.
Yeah, we're going to have a bunch of, as every year, as Matt Taylor and I record a bunch of podcasts where we go through every category and pick winners and discuss the nominees and throw in some snubs, or not snubs, like just like it's mostly me like saying a movie that has no right to be nominated for an Oscar, and just me like saying like, hey, you guys should watch Jungle Cruise. I watched that 6 times last year or something, you know, like something nuts. So look for that. Otherwise, I probably will, you know, have some I have reviewed a lot of these films, so you can always look on the Pop Break for a bunch of those, me bitching about a lot of these films and liking a couple of them.
And if you want to watch her live tweet decade-old episodes of Pretty Little Liars, you can follow her on Twitter.
Yeah, it's a real hoot.
As someone who's never watched a show, I always enjoy your tweets about it. So
I'm having a blast. Thank goodness. It's wonderful to know someone's looking.
There's dozens of us, I'm sure. Noah, dozens. How about you?
If you want to check out other stuff that I've done, you should also check out the music podcast that Justin and I do. A couple of years ago, we did Pod on the Rooftops about our favorite band, Genesis. And as we mentioned at the beginning, we've moved on to the band Rush with Podwork Angels, The Rush Hour. And you can also check out my written reviews at francenoir.blogspot.com. Coming soon, my top 10 list of 2021.
You just posted your score list of 2021. Right?
I decided to do that first. That ended up being easier, and I had the chance to see movies like Licorice Pizza, Nightmare Alley earlier than I thought. So the soundtrack, my favorite soundtracks and film scores list is up, and favorite films list will be within a week or two.
Any overlap in the score category at the Oscars for you and your list? We have Don't Look Up,
Dune, I think, right?
Encanto, Parallel Mothers, and The Power of the Dog were the original.
The Green Knight got overlooked, but that was to be expected. The Matrix Resurrections, that was the personal pick for me. Like I said, I mean, Johnny Greenwood did get nominated, but I preferred Spencer. Yeah, there's some overlap.
Anyone who wants to hear more can check out that piece over there on Noah's website. Justin, how about you? Where can we find more of your work?
So I'm on Letterboxd at The Cinemaverick. I also have a website, thecinemaverick.com, where you can find my very belated film retrospectives. I published, I guess it was a little while ago now, you can see my 2020 wrap-up, which I finally got on there and feel very proud of. You can also, as Noah mentioned, Podbrook Angels, we're really excited about that. We do that with Luke Martin from the Talking Dakota podcast. And of course, it's all about Bill Bodkin's favorite band, Rush. No, I kid.
Van Morrison's favorite band.
Oh, that very strange.
And if people want to listen to that podcast, you can subscribe to the Breakcast podcast feed on all major podcast platforms. On that same podcast feed, you can find my new podcast that I'm doing with the aforementioned Bill Bodkin, all about the MCU. It's called Bill versus the MCU, and because Bill has not seen many of those films, and I've seen all of them too many times. So we're just going through one at a time, or actually three at a time, as it were. Our first episode came out last month about Iron Man, The Incredible Hulk, and Iron Man 2. And our next episode is going to be coming out at the end of this month, and it'll be about the next three movies in Phase 1, which would be the Thor film, the first Thor film, and then Captain America, The First Avenger, and The Avengers. In addition to that, you can follow my TV podcast on Pop Break TV called TV Break, where Bill and my friend and yours, Josh Cernacki, talk about all the ins and outs of the TV world once a month. So you can check that out over there. Last month, we talked about The After Party, a very fun show, comedy, whodunit mystery with some of your favorite stars like Dave Franco and Tiffany Haddish. That's on Apple TV Plus. We talked about that show and we all really liked it. I think it got the best review of any show that we've talked about on that podcast for the last 2 years. So definitely check that out and check out our discussion. As for this show, you can follow the show on at Cinema Joes on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter at Media Thinkings and on Letterboxd at Media Thinkings. And that's going to do it for us. We will definitely check back in with you guys in a few months when the Oscars have finished and you will hear whether
every
Justin
prediction of ours is proven correct.
Yes, we'll see whether Justin, Noah, or I have won our Oscar pool. We don't let Marissa do it because she would win every year, so there would be no fun in that.
Let the amateurs have their day.
But until next time, we'll see you later. Bye-bye.